This is a CBC podcast.
Dr. Darren Grant is spending his career trying to see the invisible, measure the immeasurable, and detect the undetectable. His target, the elusive neutrino. Neutrinos are perhaps the strangest particles that physicists have identified. They're everywhere. A billion of them pass through the tip of your little finger every second. But neutrinos are ghost particles. They're so intangible, so ethereal, that they pass through normal matter like it wasn't there, only interacting with it in the rarest fluke. So catching a neutrino is, as you could imagine, a bit of a problem. But this summer, scientists announced that they had triumphed in their latest attempt to catch the uncatchable at IceCube, a massive detector built into the Antarctic ice cap. They detected a handful of neutrinos that they think had been stopped in the ice cap after traveling across a big chunk of the universe and then traveling through the entire Earth. It's pretty wild stuff. So to understand this a little better, we've invited Dr. Grant in to talk about neutrinos and his latest detection. He's a physicist at the University of Alberta and a member of the IceCube team. Dr. Grant, welcome back to Quirks and Quarks.
It's really nice to be able to talk to you this morning.
Okay, well, let's go right back to the very beginning here and the basics. What exactly is a neutrino?
It's one of nature's fundamental particles, and it's the smallest that we know of that we've detected so far. It's one of nature's building blocks, I guess is the best way to describe it. It's produced in stars, it's produced in nuclear reactors, it's produced in our atmosphere when cosmic rays interact. And what we now know is that it's the second most abundant particle also in the universe, just next to photons, to light itself.
It's really hard to conceive of a particle that is a real thing. It actually exists, but it just so rarely interacts with normal matter. It doesn't seem to care about the rest of us. How does it interact when it actually meets ordinary matter?
The neutrino, in its interactions, it's only through what we call the weak force in nature. And this is one of the reasons why the interaction is so rare, because the particle that it will interact with, they have to pass extremely close together. And those are absolutely tiny for the neutrino particles.
I know that neutrinos see the universe very differently than we do. I mean, it sees the Earth as almost transparent.
Absolutely.
Because we're mostly empty space, right? It's our the atoms in the that we're made of. The reason we feel solid is because of all the things that are happening on the outside of the atom, the electrons. But is it just the fact that we're mostly made of empty space and the neutrinos are passing through those spaces without interacting? That's why we don't see them so much?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's the right way to think of it. They're passing through the spaces. If the neutrino was able to interact with one of the other forces in nature, let's say the electromagnetic force, which you've already alluded to, and that's what holds us together. That's what glues our atoms together, and keeps us as a solid object. If they were able to do that, then there's no way they could pass between us, because they would also interact, and then they would just stop. But the neutrino's special in that it doesn't do this. It's the only particle in nature that we know of that only interacts via the weak force, and that's why they can essentially just slip right through us and not even notice that we're there.
I'm trying to think of, maybe if you think of a solar system, you know, with the sun and all the planets going around it, you could pass right through our solar system if you were small like an asteroid and not hit anything.
Oh, that's exactly it. Yeah, that's the same principle. Yeah.
Okay, so if these neutrinos go through us and go through the Earth and all that, then how do you detect them?
That's the ultimate challenge in the game that we play every day. You design and you build absolutely enormous detectors. And then it's a game of probability, where the neutrinos, as you said, there's billions passing through your fingertip every second, and they're just happily moving along into the next solar system, into the next galaxy. But if you build a large enough detector, every now and then, one of those neutrinos, they will interact. In some detectors, you'll see a handful every day. At the highest energies, which is where we look for neutrinos, maybe one a month, I guess, is what we're getting on average at the moment.
But what do you see when a neutrino does interact with an atom?
In the detectors that I work with primarily, what we're looking for is a little blip of light that gets produced when the neutrino interacts with the atom. This eerie blue glow, this blue light, it's called Cherenkov radiation, and that's ultimately what you're trying to detect.
Now, I know that Canada's involved in this, and in fact, I've been down to the Sudbury Neutrino Observatory that's, a kilometer or so down in a nickel mine, and then you go through this active mine, and then you come to this incredible clean room and a huge sphere. Tell me about that.
That's where I started. I did my PhD on the Sudbury Neutrino Observatory, or what we happily call SNOW without the W. It's exactly that principle that I described. So we constructed this enormous sphere in one of the largest underground caverns ever excavated. It's essentially the size of a 10-story apartment building. And in the center of it, you place this 12-meter diameter acrylic sphere. It looks like a giant fishbowl. And then you point optical detectors. And so they're looking for that Cherenkov light that's produced when a neutrino would interact. And in that case, the detector itself was really designed to look for the neutrinos that were coming from the sun's fusion production.
And I know that the reason that the detector was underground, it's kind of ironic, you're studying the sun, but it's underground, is that it would only be neutrinos that are passing through there.
That's exactly right. And what that does is that screens out the backgrounds, as we call them. So you isolate yourself as best as you can by going very, very deep into a nickel mine, like we did with the SNOW detector in Sudbury.
Well, I know that the SNOW detector was a big success in solving some of the problems with neutrinos that came from the sun. But as you say, we have to go to extreme measures, which brings us to Ice Cube on the Antarctic ice cap at the South Pole. Tell me about that.
Oh, that's a project that's very near and dear to my heart. So what we've done there is we've built the world's largest neutrino detector. The ice at the South Pole, when you go deep into it, it's absolutely clear. It's a pure, clear optical medium. And so you can use that to look for Cherenkov light. So it turns out to be an ideal location to look for neutrino events. And you have to go very deep. The South Pole Station glacier, the location there is almost ideal. The ice is extremely old, and it's nearly 3 kilometers deep. And so we melt our way up to 2.5 kilometers into the glacier, and we create this array, which is more than a cubic kilometer in size, of these, you know, basically these eyeballs looking into the ice, looking for the Cherenkov radiation from the neutrinos.
Okay, so you got an ice cube that's a cubic kilometer, and you're looking for little tiny blips of blue light in it to tell you that neutrinos have passed through.
That's exactly right. That's what we did. Yeah.
Well, you say it's a great place to look for neutrinos, but it's not a great place for people. What's it like working down there?
It's just an incredible experience. I've never had anything like it. I've experienced a lot of winters, and when I visited, it was special. There's no way to describe it. You land in a Hercules aircraft. You land on skis, and you know, your first glimpse when you step out of the plane, there's nothing. There's no life whatsoever, and it's just a sheet of ice as far as your eye can see. Especially early in the season, you're landing into an environment at minus 50, minus 55 Celsius, typically.
Well, I know that the Sudbury Observatory was looking at neutrinos that were mostly coming from the sun. So tell me about Ice Cube's experiments looking from neutrinos that have come from much farther away.
Right. What we're doing with Ice Cube is on two scales. We look for neutrinos at the very highest energies that we expect are being produced in the universe. And the idea is that the neutrinos are being produced in some of the universe's most violent astrophysical processes. So if you had a gamma ray burst go off, where in 10 seconds time you emit all of the energy that the sun produces in its entire lifetime, you'll get extremely high particle interactions. And those will produce neutrinos. Those neutrinos, they're nature's ideal astronomical messenger, because the idea is that they would come streaming to us from those events, bringing the information in a pure form, both the energy and the direction. And then if you can detect those, you can look back and you can actually learn about those astrophysical processes, these really extreme events in the universe, and start to unravel some of their mysteries.
So it sounds to me that the detectors are not only trying to understand the fundamental processes of physics going on within the atom, but it's also acting like a telescope to look out into the universe.
And that's exactly it. This is what's been harnessed with the Ice Cube Observatory. We're opening a brand new field, which people have now called neutrino astronomy, where you can use the neutrino much the way that people have used light to study the universe. You know, we look at the universe with gamma rays, and we look at the universe with X-rays and with radio waves. And now, with Ice Cube, with these observations that have been reported over the last, 2 years, most recently updated this summer, we have neutrino astronomy. We have a way that we can now start to look at the universe using this incredibly elusive particle. This is incredibly exciting. We're right at that infancy, right? It's sort of the threshold of a new era for looking at the universe.
I know that in normal astronomy, using light, that there's dust and stuff that gets in the way, so we can only see so far or so well, but neutrinos don't interact with dust, so it sounds like it'd be a much clearer picture.
And that's exactly right. And that's what we're looking forward to. That's what we're preparing for, is to go bigger, you know, to upgrade the detector, to make it larger. And that enhances what your sensitivity to these neutrinos would be. That makes it possible to gather more of the neutrinos. And it's like exposing a photograph as those neutrinos come in. They're bringing that information from these sources, and it's like a pixel getting lit up in a giant map of the universe. And as you take more data, and as those events arrive, that map, you know, it starts to form and it starts to become clearer and clearer.
So how far out could we see? How much better could we see with neutrinos?
That's a great question, and that's what has us still scratching our heads. We think that the neutrinos that we're seeing at the highest energies are extragalactic, but we need to make the picture clearer, and that's just a matter of time. Either running the Ice Cube detector or building a bigger detector or building more of them in different locations of the Earth. These are the baby steps where you've seen the first ones and you're trying to glean from that a bigger picture.
Now, this summer, you did say that you found these cosmic neutrinos that came from outside of our galaxy. Were you able to determine what kind of cosmic catastrophe caused them, or what event took place?
Unfortunately, no. We're still looking for the golden event. If you saw multiple neutrinos at these really high energies coming from the same direction, then what you would do is you would point telescopes there, and you would look for your favorite, you know, really violent astrophysical object that could produce those types of energies. That would be a golden signature. You would say, yes, it definitely came from that active galactic nuclei, or it came from, you know, that region where there's a really active black hole. And that starts to unravel, you know, the mystery of not only what's happening in those astrophysical bodies, but it tells us also which objects are sending the highest energy cosmic rays, the charged particles that we see interact in our atmosphere all the time. That's a 100-year mystery. We still don't know what's sending those particles to the Earth. You can use the neutrinos if you can get that correlation. That's your first hint. That's your, you know, that's your smoking gun about what happened, where they come from.
So you've done the first part of that. You found the neutrino signal, but you haven't found the object yet.
Yeah, now we have to learn patience.
Well, you say you want to go bigger. How much bigger than Ice Cube can you get with a neutrino detector?
What we're thinking about in the Antarctic at the South Pole is something that would give us on the order of about a factor of 10 increase in size, and so a factor of 10 in the signal. And so we're looking for something on the order of 10 cubic kilometers.
Well, it seems that in the history of astronomy, every time we get a new set of eyes, the universe just becomes more and more interesting, and looks like neutrinos are going to do that once again.
Yeah, we're really excited. It's been a big boost, yeah.
Dr. Grant, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Dr. Darren Grant is an associate professor and Canada Research Chair in Astroparticle Physics at the University of Alberta. And that's it for this week's edition of Quirks and Quarks. If you'd like to get in touch with us, just go to the contact link on our webpage. And to get to our webpage, go to cbc.ca/quirks, where you can subscribe to our podcast, listen to our audio archives, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at CBC Quirks, and read our latest blog. Quirks and Quarks is produced by Jim Hanman, Jim Lebbins, and Mark Crawley. I'm Bob McDonald. Thanks for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.